She's a mathematician from Baltimore. She's a middle school student from Iowa. She's your host of this here podcast. We're all makers, each one of us. Hi there. Welcome to another episode of Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by eejournal.com. I'm Amelia Dalton, and I have a very special fish fry to throw your way this week. My intrepid producer and fish fry field reporter, Laura Morris, has a pair of super cool interviews. Maker Faire founders Dale Doherty and Sherry Huss join us this week to discuss a wide variety of issues that surround the maker movement today, how it intersects with professional engineering, and what our EE community can learn from the maker movement, and more. Check it out.
I'm here at World Maker Faire with Maker Faire co-founder Sherry Huss. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us, Sherry.
Great, thank you.
So to start off, I wonder if you could give me an overview of Maker Faire and your role in creating it.
Well, let's see, Maker Faire, this is our 12th year. We're kind of ending our 12th year. My role is I came on to actually kind of build and create Maker Faire, and it was an idea that happened after Dale Doherty created Make Magazine. So Make was launched in 2005, and actually our editor-in-chief at the time, too, was Mark Frauenfelder, which I think Mark added a special touch and flair to kind of overall making. Mark, just so you know, is a founder of also Boing Boing. And then in 2006, we launched our first Maker Faire, which was Earth Day weekend. The idea of Maker Faire was really to come up with a festival to celebrate makers. So fast forward 12 years, I think we've done that. We've actually have 220 Maker Faires this year around the world in 48 countries. We produce two of the largest events, Bay Area and New York. And we have kind of a tiered licensing program. The next largest cities would be Rome and Shenzhen. And all of those are about 100,000 or more in attendees. Again, with 40-some countries, we actually have a pretty nice global platform.
And we talked with co-founder Dale Doherty about the connection between the maker movement and professional engineering. And I was wondering if you could speak a bit to the relationship between the maker movement and education.
I do think that the maker movement, you know, and I, when we started this, there really wasn't a movement. I think that's also important to note. I think a movement really was defined probably in 2009 when we were kind of coming out of the recession, when other things that were happening like low-cost tools, so things like 3D printers, all the different types of digital fabrication were actually being made available at a really low cost, things like crowdfunding. And also with the crash of the economy, people started saying, well, I'm either losing my job, or schools are cutting down programs for my kids. And I think that that's when the spotlight came on the makers and the movement to say, you know what, we can start doing this on our own. So with education, there's still a long way to go, but we're starting to make great progress, I think, on that front, primarily by providing tools and support and helping teachers and educators to bring this into their classroom. We're not a traditional book publishing company. And actually, I started at Edison Wesley Benjamin Cummings way back in the day, where there are, you know, things like teacher's guides and all that. We don't have that, but what we do work on providing are like playbooks. So, and letting people kind of add to it and take it to the next level. And that's even how we grew our whole Maker Faire presence around the world. So a lot of that came from that O'Reilly spirit of open source, collaborative, participatory culture. And that, I think, is something that's really important in when you look at Maker Faire and even Make and what we do and how we treat the community.
So for our audience of professional engineers who might get excited about the maker movement and want to get involved and help, what do you see as the best ways for them to get involved?
Sure. You know, I think that there's probably multiple channels. Some will depend on the cities that they live in. There's certainly maker spaces, and those maker spaces could be standalone. They could be professional ones like tech shop, or they could be maker spaces that are starting to be put into schools. So there's no shortage of places for people that have a desire to get involved and or share tools, technology, ideas to get involved. On other levels, I would say they could become a maker themselves. Mm-hmm. So probably the easiest thing is, you know, for all the maker fairs, what we do is put out an application, and it's free to attend if you're a maker. If you're here, if your primary motivation is to come and to showcase and share what you're learning, a finished project or a work in progress, then we make that really easy for the makers to be here. Other ways, I suppose, online communities. We've started something called Maker Share. So what they can do is create a digital portfolio. And this is primarily to become a platform so that makers can start connecting with each other, whether it's geo-based or project-based or mission-based, starting to provide tools around that as well.
And what do you see as sort of the next steps of the future of the movement? Like, what's coming for making?
That's a good question, and we think about that pretty much every day. I think there is a next step of the movement. After this, will be interesting to talk to our team about what that actually means. I think we'll probably starting to see things that are more vertical to some degree, where even here we're starting to see things like maker health as a category, where it's coming out of colleges like MIT, and organizations are coming together to actually get behind it. And when you have crises like the hurricane, or when we have Katrina, the earthquake before, or hurricane, we can actually start seeing where these organizations are coming together. Social impact, making for good, is going to be another area. And you'll see a lot of that here, whether, again, underdeveloped countries or just groups that kind of care, that want to get out there and share and collaborate with folks to make the world better.
Well, Sherry, thank you so much for taking
Great,
the time.
Thank you.
We're here at World Maker Faire with Dale Doherty, co-founder of Maker Faire. Welcome, Dale.
Thank you.
Just to start off, can you give us an overview of Maker Faire and the maker movement?
Well, Maker Faire, I think, grew out of Make Magazine, which I started in 2005. And I had the idea of, pretty soon I was meeting such interesting people, makers, that I thought I could bring them together to share their work with the public, and that they would also enjoy meeting each other. And I think the basic idea there was I could think of this as kind of broad and horizontal, like, rather than categories. And, you know, people say, oh, I'm a roboticist, or I'm a ceramicist. And kind of say, well, you all make stuff, so let's get you thinking together. And just you'd enjoy talking to other people. And I think I wanted people to experience people who are making things and talk to them and see what they do. And it sort of evolved into this, I really believe that we're trying to reconnect people to making as something that's human, as something that's enjoyable and fun, but something ultimately that I think is pretty important for today and for the future.
So I was wondering if you could comment a little bit on the relationship between professional engineering and the maker movement. Like, what can the maker movement give to professionals, and what can professionals give to the movement?
Right. So let me take a different category.
Okay.
Let's talk about sports. Let's say you wanted to become a professional athlete. You don't walk up to a professional team and say, can I play? You have to go to a community and learn to play, and you have to develop as a player to get better at doing that. And if you're lucky, it might get you a college scholarship. And if you're really, really good, you know, you might become a professional. But there are also others that follow that route that, oh, they circle back and become coaches, or they circle back and open a gym, or they do other things. So if we think of it as not just a linear step,
right,
thing, but it is kind of a triangle where there's, kind of relatively speaking, a few professionals, but there's a lot of amateurs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the definition of an amateur is you get to choose what you do, why you do it, and how you do it. There's very few constraints on you. And so I think the makers, at least they originate as amateurs. They made, you know, we have makers that are professionals, and,
mm-hmm,
but this idea that they get to control the thing that they do. What I find out about talking to even professional engineers is they have a maker project on the side, right? It's something they're doing in the garage. And I remember talking to someone who says, you know, you go to the conference and, yeah, we sit through all the sessions, but at the bar night, we get to talk about what we're really excited about, you know, just our projects. And I think what really keys me into this is that enthusiasm. Like, these people love to do what they do, and we don't need grand prizes. We don't need, you know, a lot of other rewards. The reward really, because I like to do this. I think about it all the time, and, you know, I think we are at the same time creating this almost a scale, like, for kids to become. It might be engineers, they might be designers, they might be artists. I don't really know or particularly care. I also have been talking to these professional engineers. I see it in them, and I want to kind of develop that in kids. I fundamentally don't believe that the next generation of engineers will come because we have some great school program for them. It'll come because we connect them to something in their life and out in the world that they're excited about, or a problem that they want to solve. And they just, you know, they may be curious, they may be exploring something. And what I'm trying to do here is allow them to participate, just as that young athlete has to play on a team to really learn their own ability. Today, if you're a young kid and you have any of this ability, you probably don't get to exercise it at school very much. You probably can't find a place in the community where it fits. Maybe for some they'll find a robotics league, but that's a pretty narrow, narrow way of looking at things. And I think really the future is a much more you actually do this at work. You have to cross disciplines. You have to think outside of what you already know and connect to other people who know things. And so I want engineers to be creative. I want creative people to think like engineers and all those other professions. You know, in some ways, science and technology is at the heart of everything we're doing, I think, in the future, and whether you're an engineer or marketer or something else. And these are tools, and we're tool users and makers of tools. You know, what I don't like to hear sometimes is, oh, they're just a bunch of hobbyists. And I said, yes, they are a bunch of hobbyists. You know, that's a good thing. They do stuff that other people won't do, you know, even if you paid them. And I actually think some of the ends of innovation will come from makers because they aren't in the context of business or government or some other thing, which is telling them what to do. They could go out and figure out that this needs to be done. I'm interested in doing it. You know, I'll give you an example of someone here yesterday talking. He created an Arduino-powered drifting buoy. Now, so he created a structure, put an Arduino in it. It has a satellite modem in there. It's cool. About $400. He's a mathematician, right, from Baltimore. And when I was talking to his wife, who was around, I said, so this is your side job? He said, yes. And his wife said, no, it isn't. It's front and center. It's like he comes over at night, eats dinner, goes down the basement, and this is what he's working on. Yeah. And when talking to him about it, he had his buoy. He has to get out in the current. He wanted to get it in the Gulf Stream. So he started, you know, calling up sea captains of some of the cruise ships and yachts and other things. You know, will you drop my buoy off? And he said, I don't know these people. I had no professional context for doing it. And he was sort of overwhelmed by not that everybody's willing to say yes, but they were really interested in what he was doing and wanted to know more about it. And it was almost this kind of cross connection that where you learn about someone else and what they're into, and you kind of gain respect for that. And his buoy drifted down the west coast of Florida and actually got picked up by the Hurricane Irma and was kind of boosted up the East Coast. And, you know, every day it's kind of like, here's a satellite, you know, talking to a, you know, satellite. And it also had the ability to pick up on ships that were passing. So he had like a catalog of all the ships along that route that this little buoy was doing. So marvelous projects like that, that you don't really ask why you do it. You know, it's just like, it's so cool. Tell me more.
I was interested in your perspective because I feel like we've seen over the past several years pretty big companies like TI or Intel or trying to kind of figure out Microsoft, trying to figure out the maker market and like what can we do in this space and how do we reach out to this community and sometimes struggling a bit with it and what your perspective was on either what they were finding or what they were missing.
Well, I mean, I need some of those companies to be able to do what we're doing here, to be able to put on these events. I wish many times that they would make more of a commitment to this. Intel was a really important partner for us, but they've kind of stepped out of some of this recently, closed down a division that was producing products. I think sometimes they have misunderstandings of what the opportunities are here. I think where most of them do see some, you know, especially the more they get engaged, they see that we are, you know, reaching young people and I think a fairly diverse audience here, and that we're kind of introducing these practical hands-on skills around technology. I really wish they'd be more, you know, to some degree partners and understand the value of investing in this way. I think the trouble, a lot of them have their own programs and, you know, good or bad, they just end up doing their own thing. But I think what excited me about Intel and others, when they really understood what was going on, they realized that it wasn't like, well, the maker community is over here, my company's over here. It's like they overlap. There are makers inside of Microsoft or Intel, and Microsoft employees are part of an external, you know, maker community that they go out and do other things. Now, if you can kind of tie that together more, I think you have a real good engine for innovation. If you just think of it as I'm going to sell products to this community, well, you know, maybe that's pretty limited.
Hmm. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us about Maker Faire. It's a great event every year.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, good. Well, I appreciate it. I'd really like, and especially professional engineers as a group, to look at how they can help in this community, how they can participate, especially as makers develop some of that. You know, it's sort of, you know, use that sports analogy, they get through, you know, the minor leagues, and they need transitions. Mm-hmm. And sometimes schools are not, our universities, I think it's changing. You're seeing more maker spaces in those universities. But a kid that really likes making, which I think we're kind of creating a generation that really likes making, and then goes to university that's going to sit them down in a room and lecture and just teach them theory and math all the time, they're not going to stay there very long. And I think, you know, we have to gain a little bit more respect for the sort of practical and applied side of engineering, and really get people that are excited about making things into engineering schools and out of engineering schools. I get a lot of feedback from businesses that that's the kind of person they're looking to hire, not the one that, you know, just got good grades. And I think we're trying to, in some ways, make her fair, and other senses are create ways for young people to demonstrate, anybody to demonstrate that they can do things and that they learn it. And, you know, I think if you go back in history, you know, 50 years, you had a generation of engineers that grew up off of farms and factory families that had a lot of those practical skills. Then they married some of that with theoretical understanding, and they became great professionals and accomplished quite a bit. Today, the kids don't have that practical grounding. They've not worked with tools, and they haven't really built things. So they might have fantastic math skills, but it's like on paper, you know? They don't know what to do when you give them a problem to solve. They want to be told what the answer is so that they can create the answer. So it's a really different way of looking at things, and I want to gain a little bit more respect, whether it's for the amateurs, the professionals that are really creative problem solvers.
Be out in the world.
Yes, yeah, and do things that matter ultimately, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it may not be business, it may be other things. You know, I'm fascinated by, you know, the aftermath of hurricanes in South Florida and Houston and the Caribbean. We have an entire rebuilding effort there, and we actually have the technology and the community here that could really help that. I don't know if we can get them all together there, but you could use digital fabrication techniques to really put up homes and other structures faster. You could train people down there who are out of work because of the storms to be the producers of those structures when there's limited tradespeople down there to do the work. So, you know, I think this is kind of the future. We just have to kind of figure out the awkward ways of getting there.
It's fabulous. Thank
okay,
you so
thank
much.
You very much.
Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, keyword EEJournal. It is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of November 24th, 2017, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.